Start today the Torah in Northwest London in conjunction with Vad Harabonim Lon Istam. 29th of Teves, 2nd of January, Dayan David Kohn. Tefillin, the pitfalls and how to avoid them.
Yeshus. Esa she yesh loy kan, and esa she enenu kan, imonu oimet hayoim, but very much in the, either listening to this shiur now, electronically somewhere else, or it's been recorded and people will listen to this shiurim. Everybody here, and everybody who's going to listen to this, without a doubt, will be devastated not to have put tefillin on any particular day, let alone a week, a month, a year, or several years. You want to buy a pair of tefillin for your son. You want to buy a new pair of tefillin for yourself. You want to buy a new pair of tefillin for your grandson. How do you know that these tefillin that you're going to buy are kosher? How do you know? You go into, whether it's you walk into a Hebrew bookstore, you walk into, you speak to a sofa, you walk into a shop which looks as if it's a place that they sell tefillin, mezuzahs, they seem to be knowledgeable, it seems to be a workshop. How do you know that what you're buying are really kosher? And this next hour, Beshutvas with Rav David Zinger Shlitter, we're going to try and open up this closed world and try and give you an idea, an inkling, as to what is going on, what isn't going on, and how we can protect ourselves to make sure that what we buy, what you buy, what you're using yourself, are the genuine article. You see, who is taking responsibility for what we are buying in terms of mezuzahs, in terms of tefillin? Just take a pair of tefillin. For a pair of tefillin to be kosher, a pair of tefillin has five absolute crucial components. If any one of those five components are not kosher, your pair of tefillin are posel. In addition to that, in order for a pair of tefillin to be kosher, there are five baalei melacha. There'll be five people working, professional, skilled workers, working on the pair of tefillin. And if any of those five don't do their job properly, with the right kavanas, then also the tefillin apostle. What are these five components? Let's go into them one by one. So the five materials needed for parshiyos for tefillin. You need the parshiyos. Well, the parshiyos have two parts to them. The cloth, the parchment, which needs to be tanned. It needs, first of all, the material needs to be min amutza b'fichot. It also needs to be tanned and prepared the shei mitzvahs tefillin. So the person who's doing it has to have kavona. So if it is a non-Jew in China, somewhere in the Far East, and that's where it's been produced, you would never know about it. It hasn't been tanned and procured lishma, the dyo, the ink. So the ink has to be min amutza b'ficha. If the ink isn't produced, there's now the badats, for example, the badats of the charedis have three inks that they give action to. There's an ink that was always used, the nari ink was always used. There's a new ink that just come out, diochanon, just come back from Eretz Yisrael. One of the privileged few was able to get there. And whilst I was there, I went round to Seferim, I went round to Batim workshops, factories, I went round to and spoke to this, that and the other one. There's a new ink called Diophanon. I went asking round, what's in it? The Seferim said to me, if you're going to the Poskim, if you're going to the Mulkim, can you find out whether this ink, who's giving action to it? Who knows what's in it? It's a secret. Nobody will tell you what they're putting into this ink. Well, until it's been clarified, until there is a consensus that the contents of this ink are acceptable, again, It could be something as simple as that. So there's the cloth, there's the ink, there's the button. What could be wrong with button? Five possible problems with the button themselves. We'll come back to it in a moment. There's the giddim that are used to stitch up the actual tefillin themselves. Again, according to many, if the giddim are not made properly, if they're not made, those need to be with a heksher as well. And of course, then you've got the ritzus. And the ritzus is an old story. It was an old, about 5 years ago, the ritzus coming in from China that had been produced. Nobody there, nobody lishmol, the whole question, they were peeling. And the peeling may, in a way, have been the least of the problems. The main problem was they were produced from cheap furniture leather in the Far East. Nobody was there. There was nobody producing them lishma. So you've got wonderful pashas. You may have exotic batim. You may have everything as wonderful. But if the ritzus are possible, you're not going to be yotze to the mitzvah. So these are the five components that we need. What can be wrong? What can be wrong with the batim? The answer is the following. Batim, I've made a list like this. Number one is that every bias needs ribua. It needs to be square. What needs to be square? I've just got a bit of an allergy to potassium dichromate in the production of leather, so. Going to take a bias over here, which is not a particularly good bias, but it's good enough for our purposes. So a bias over here, so it needs to be square across here. It needs to be as square as the eye can see. That needs to be, there needs to be what's called a ribua. It also needs to be that's called the ktsitsa, the top of it. You also need that the mavarto, which is the base, that has to be square, not including this bit, but just this and that needs to be square. The stitching on the back needs to be ribua, it needs to be square, noticeably square, and the corners needs, the stitching of one side needs to meet the stitching of the other side. If it isn't like that, even if it was like that when you bought it, it's no longer kosher. And therefore, that's number one. Number two, the shin with three branches, the shin with four branches, those need to be chokirechos, they need to be written, they need to be pulled out. They mustn't be stamped, that they become chok tochos. Number four is, what about between the batim? You've got over here, the shel yad is all one piece, the shel rosh is four pieces. So the four batim of the shel rosh, those, if they're stuck together, so they're closed, completely stuck together, so then they're possible. If they're not prudas, they're not opened at all. And next question is, were they ever prudas? We've seen tefillin that all they've done is they've made them like the shel yad. They've done lovely ink on top with scratch marks. But in truth, it's one piece and not at all four pieces. Again, that would make it possible. Similarly, we need to know on certain tefillin, that the tefillin that most people have, the tefillin that are more pricey, are made of gussus. They come from cow's hide. But there are batim that are available, and this is what I went out to Israel to see, who's making them and how they're made. Batim that are pshutos are actually made from dakas. They're actually made from very thin cloth. And I can show you some of these. They're made from very thin cloth. They look perfectly good. This is an old set, comes from the Shane's box. But it looks, you might say, it's very robust. You try and take it to pieces. This is what we've done. This is the way it looked. A perfectly nice bias before we started with it. You take it to pieces, and you see over here, the true bias is just thin cloth. That's all there is to it. These are the pshutas that are being sold, and some of the cheaper pairs, this is the way they are. They are just, they're using all types of, this one's got wood as a strengthener in it, and all the bias is really is just thin cloth made into the shape of tefillin, and then strengthened with whatever it is underneath. It's in two pieces, and this looks quite a nice bias, doesn't it? Quite nice. It's in two pieces. There you are. And all you've got over here is very thin cloth in between, and this is just stuck on top of the marvalta, just stuck on top of the marvalta that they've made. This marvalta, by the way, the person who I went to at a workshop in Beit Shemesh, he told me there's absolutely no hechsher to this piece over here in the middle. He says it comes from shoemakers. Just simple as that. They've taken it and they've made it into the right shape. This wasn't made by Shmuel at all. He says there isn't a factory anywhere known that produces these which are done by Shmuel. He says. So that you've got, this is what it is, pieces put together. If this piece, and this is just thin cloth put onto a frame. That's what you've got. Don't despair too much, because it could be kosher had the actual cloth actually gone through. Here's another one we took to pieces. This one looks, in a way, theoretically a little better. You can see the O continues down here. It's the same thing. It's got some type of a base inside. All you've got is thin parchment on top. But at least it's got these flaps. Why do I say at least it's got them? Because this pair is impossibly possible, because the stitching has to include at least the O that's going on over here. You wouldn't know, seeing a pair of tefillin like this, that it's really, these are really dakus, and really feels very strong and very firm. You're not really feeling the strength of the leather, you're feeling the strength of the base below it. There's all types of things going on, you just wouldn't know. As an amateur, somebody who doesn't know anything about tefillin, you would think that this is a robust, sturdy, perfectly kosher pair of tefillin. These batim are sold for about 150 shekel. That's what they cost. Very, very little. And there's plenty of profit.
So wood in between is quite...
Exactly. There are all types of problems. There's problems of chatzitzas. There's problems of the glue. There's problems of the fact that the O, which is the actual bias itself, is not stitched together into the malvarta, which is the base, and the titura, which is the base, and basically, so you've got all these problems. How would you know? It's painted over beautifully. There are all types of other problems that the shin itself.
Well, in the shin must be one.
The shin, often you'll find the shin that the bottom of the shin has to touch the titura itself. Often you see pairs that they don't. I think one of the pairs over here that I've got, you can see that they don't. I'll show people afterwards, and that's the thing. But these are just some of the pitfalls, some of the problems that we've got. And that is with the button that we've got over here. That is an unsuspecting, beautiful, the finish is beautiful. Nobody would know. You wouldn't know unless you take the thing to pieces. If you have a look, you look at it afterwards, you'll see there's loads of glue inside these batim. And these were the person who used to deal with what are called pshutos. They used to deal with them. And by the way, if you go to one of the bookstores and you buy a pair of tefillin, if you can have a look, look it up in their online menu as to what they offer you, or walk into the shop and offer They are selling pairs of tefillin for £350, for £360. These pairs of tefillin, they have to be posel. There's no point in opening them. Because, simply put, if the time took £350, £360, they're paying VAT. There has to be an expense. There has to be profit there for the shop. There's profit there for the person who is supplying them. What's left? How many hours does it take in order to be able to write a set of parshiyos that are kosher? The answer is somewhere between 20 and 30 hours. We've publicised, and I hope this will get more publicity, that a mezuzah, for example, this is before Yom HaNaroyim, we hope this does get more publicity, people should make a back-of-the-envelope calculation as to how long it takes to write a minimally kosher mezuzah. How long does it take? You can't write a minimally kosher mezuzah of Beis Yosef Ksav in much less than 3 hours. 3 hours, we reckon. So, skilled work, 3 hours, materials, and again, the profit, the markup of the middleman and the person who's selling it to you. How much will a minimally kosher mezuzah cost? Like? A mehuda mezuzah will take about 5 hours to write, including, of course, writing it and hagor. It will take less than that. Parshias is about seven times the length it takes to write a mezuzah. So you're talking about minimally 20 hours to 30 hours of work, just the parshias. Make a calculation. Pay him only £20 an hour, if you will, which is absolutely absurd, because writing tefillin, you have to write much smaller than you're writing in mezuzahs. And remember, tefillin and mezuzahs have to be written kasidron. So if there's any mistake that you've got, you find later, the whole thing needs to be put into shemus. So there's that risk. You've got the cost, you've got everything else. Then you've got the button to be made properly, the kashrus, the hiddur, as they should be made, to pull out the shins. That's the way they have to pull them out. And it's hours and hours of work to produce a kosher pair of tefillin.
Is there any minimum size of the measurements of the right, proper height?
We're not getting involved in that for the purpose of this year. I want to bring out, just bring to your attention that if a pair of tefillin is too cheap to be true, then it's not true. They're no metzias. There's no Primark. There's no something in the Far East. And if they are, they're not going to be kosher. But where are cheap tefillin coming from? They're coming because they're being mass produced by who knows by whom. You can find out by whom. But there's no way that a kosher pair of tefillin can be produced for less than, make your own calculations, because I don't even want to mention figures over here, because it'll depend. If you want a pair of tefillin that are kosher without a sofik, without a doubt, you're talking about definitely north of £1,000. Without a doubt, that's what you're talking about. There will be productions of cheaper pairs of tefillin, slightly cheaper, but not much less. Remember the pound? The pound has fallen, is half the value of the shekel that it was 10 years ago. And this is, you're paying in shekel, in shkolim. That's what you are. And therefore, these, to be able to buy a kosher pair of tefillin, who are you relying on? Who is taking responsibility for this? The answer is that we, particularly as English people, we're very good at trusting. We're trusting, we come along, and somebody seems to look the part, he walks the walk, talks the talk, as the expression goes, and we know nothing, absolutely nothing about tefillin. We know nothing about mezuzahs. All we know is that we want to buy some mezuzahs, we want to buy a pair of tefillin. So we walk into the place, and the person's very nice, and it smells of ink, and it's the place's thing, his hands has got ink over him, and he knows he's wearing an overall. It just looks fantastic, just the part. And we know nothing. So he knows infinitely more than I do when I come to buy a pair of tefillin. But this is impossible. How do we deal with the situation? This is why the Vad, the Mishmer, the Inyone Stam, was set up. And it was set up intentionally with the most senior members of the Rabbonim in the area, because that's the way a responsible Vad should be set up. And the idea is that it spans right across the spectrum. There's no everybody, all the Potidinim, the Ashkenazim, the Sfardim, the various thing, everybody is included in this. And the idea is to up the notch, to be able to. So what's been done? What's been done so far is that Baruch Hashem, we've been able to manage to get a production of mezuzahs with a heksher. Would you ever buy a piece of meat without a heksher? Just because Yankel knows Moshe, who knows somebody, who knows a thing, oh yeah, it must be a kosher. You never buy a piece of meat without a heksher. Why would you buy a mezuzah or a pair of tefillin without a heksher? So we've, Baruch Hashem, been able to start with Mishmer Estam, that they've given their heksher. How does the heksher work? We know the sefer. What do you mean you know the sefer? The sofa has to have a ksav kabbalah. You don't have an electrician. You don't allow a gas safe technician into your house to be able to sort out your installed central heating or to be able to rewire your house. You never do it unless there's somebody who is registered, gas safe registers, got the electrical certificate up to date. They have to keep doing exams to make sure they're up to date. A ksav kabbalah from a sofa has to be in date. They have to keep doing exams. Why? Because even Seferim, who knew the halachos beautifully 3 or 4 years ago, have been found to have forgotten fundamental dinim in writing of mezuzahs, of tefillin. Absolutely. Why? Because they're busy. They're busy all day from morning to night. We don't pay them enough for what the work that they do. We don't appreciate enough the work they do. It's not our fault, but this is the market that is at the moment. And therefore, they're busy somehow. B'nafsha yovi lachmoy, they've got no time to sit and to learn, to go over the halachas. Therefore, Mishmeres Estam is brought in, and so others, that you've got to keep going over, do an exam every 3 years, minimum every 3 years, do another exam, make sure they're over dinim. That's number one. Number two, how do we know that this sefer is scrupulously honest? What happens if something went wrong with a ksav? You never know what he did and what he didn't do. Whether he scratched it out, whether he did a chok tochas to be able to fix it. You'll never know. How do you know which ksav he used? You'll never know where he got it from. You'll never know. So what do we do? So we speak to the rav. Oh, this sefer regularly asks. If he doesn't have a rav who he regularly asks, don't take anything from him. Because Stam needs constant shailas to be asked. And therefore, this is, we ask, does he come regularly to ask? Who does he ask? How does he ask? Does he give the impression of being honest, of being Yirei Shomayim? That's what we do. Then you've got the Magia. Somebody's got to check over to see, to make sure nobody's infallible. Check over, make sure each letter, each part of each letter is written correctly. And who does this? A Magia, somebody who is a proofreader. And the Magia, does he know his dinim? Does he know his halachas? Is he in practice finding the mistakes? Is he rushed off his feet? Is he being paid per mezuzah? And not very much. Or is he being paid per hour? So that he can work slowly and methodically and make sure that he finds things out. This is what, and then check the ksav itself to make sure the ksav itself is good, the spacing, the letters, everything, etc., etc. That is what is involved in giving a heksher to a mezuzah, to giving a heksher to parshias. I've just come back from Eretz Yisrael and I spent an hour and a half with the Badats, with the head of the Lishko of Stam, and they were very excited. They've heard about what's going on here. There's an awakening here, which I have to tell you, Rabbi Sai, has definitely triggered an awakening in Eretz Yisrael. And there, the Badats are very interested in setting up, giving heksher to tefillin, both to the finished article, but they said we're only going to give a heksher if We know what the cloth is, what the ink is. We need to, there's actually today, by the way, it's been going on for some time. Every bias which is made responsibly has a hechsher. It's got a plomber to it. It's got a hechsher stamp attached to it. Every single, if you get butting, you ask, and this is what I'm going to ask the tzibur to help us. How do we manage to make a turnaround? You can only buy what is being sold. How do we bring a rap about to change? About 5 years ago, when I started on the Ritzuas scandal to expose it and to try and eradicate it from London and from around about, I went round with various bits of Ritzuas that I had put into hot water and showed how they peeled off and what was underneath them, etc., etc. And one of the people I went to, the great Rabbonim, was Rav David Morgenstern, one of the famous Talmidim of Rabbi Yashiv Zich Tzadi Brocha. And he gave me a wonderful piece of advice. He said to me, don't fight the Sochru. Don't fight the merchants. Persuade the Tzibor to demand. Or Abbosai, what you demand is going to be this tomorrow's supply. What you demand today will be tomorrow's supply. If you walk into a shop and you want to buy a mezuzah, and you say to the person selling the mezuzah, either you ask for a mezuzah with a hechsher, which I hope in the near future, it won't just be ours that we've got together with Mishmeres Hastam. The Bedats have said they're going to go on for it. There's Hoy V'Hodah in Bnei Barak. There's another organization. And then everybody will come in, just like you buy a piece of meat with a hechsher. You'll be able to, that is the thing everybody will say, I'm only prepared to buy a mezuzah with a hechsher. Somebody knows what's been going on, who, what, and how. It's up to us to demand that we are only going to buy schera where it's either got a hechsher or we know who wrote it. And once we get the name of the person who wrote it, I can tell you, if you go into any of these places today and you say, who wrote what you're selling? They look at you blank. I went into one of the shops locally over here and they challenged me. Our mezuzahs are kosher. I had a look at them. We had a look at them together, David Zinger and I. We looked through them. We found multiple psulim in each one of them. So he said to me, I'm shocked. I don't know anything about mezuzahs. Please, if they're possible, speak to my supplier. Spoke to a supplier, lovely person in Bnei Barak, and I said to him, how can you send such schera here to London? What are you doing? It's a terrible thing. They're possible. I said, each one of the mezuzahs I checked, Apostle, how can you do this? He said, shopkeeper doesn't know. He bought it in good faith. You've got a wonderful Jewish-sounding name. And you live in Bnei Barak. What's going on? So he said, his answer, he said to me, what can I do? He says, they don't want to pay anymore. So that's the standard that I can supply. Is that an answer? No, it isn't. And I told him that it's his achrayus and that he can't make a parnosa on the pasulus of the kiyum of the mitzvahs of the mezuzahs and tefillin of thousands of yidden. It's an unthinkable avla, and he'll be held to account for it. But the truth of the matter is, if we're not prepared to pay, we've got to appreciate how much it's costing. And I know genuine erlich ha-sofrim all over in here and all over are complaining that nobody wants to pay what it genuinely costs in order to be able to. So we have a part to play in this. We've got to demand where things come from. We've got to know, ask. You don't have to be ashamed. And if the seller of the tefillin, the seller of the mezuzahs, doesn't know, just go away. Don't buy anything from them. They don't know. Then why should you? Who are you relying upon? So that you're relying upon somebody a long chain of producers, of suppliers, it comes from somewhere. Who knows who wrote it? Literally, some mezuzahs have been found. They found the Israelis when they went into Gaza. One of the places, they thought it was a terrorist cell. They stormed into the place there and they found a large room full of Arabs writing mezuzahs. They've also found sources of mezuzahs being written on Shabbos by female students in Rachav ben Yehuda in Yerushalayim. want to make a bit of promise. How are they going to pay for a bit of pocket money for that? Who knows who wrote it? Don't even bother looking at a mezuzah. Don't even bother considering to buy a pair of tefillin unless you know reliably where these come from. And at the moment, you need every self-respecting bias comes with a hechsher. Every respecting reel of ritzuas comes with a hechsher. The good hechsherim are the Badats and Rav Landa. Other hechsherim, those are the ones that those maybe need to be asked in particular detail, but those are the two self-respecting and reliable hechsherim. When it comes to ritzu, when it comes to parshis, when it comes to mezuzahs, so these are things that were mezuzahs already, it started already, there's a huge shortage of mezuzahs, there's a huge shortage of parshis as well at the moment, for a number of reasons. Number one, a huge number of Sifrei Torah have been ordered by all types of people due to Corona Minyanim and the like, which you need a Geir Rebbe's Takana to tell people to stop writing Sifrei Torah because people literally don't have mezuzahs. I know my son just got married, asked somebody for a mezuzah, and he said, I'm terribly sorry, I've got a 2-month waiting list for a mezuzah. This is one mezuzah you wanted. 2-month waiting list. Baruch Hashem. I found another supply I knew was good in Bnei Barak. And they gave me, but I think I've got a bit of protection being able to get the mezuzahs. There's a huge shortage of mezuzahs, and we're trying to deal with that to train in new sofrim to write. But, and therefore the price has gone up. One of the sofrim told me what a mezuzah used to cost. A mezuzah that used to cost 300 shekel, he says, today will cost 500 shekel. There's a huge pressure on the market, but the main thing is that chas v'shalom, shouldn't be a situation where people are parting with hard-earned money in all genuine, in a genuine move to be able to mekayim HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvahs, and the result of it is that you end up parting with your money, getting something which isn't kosher, getting something which is b'dieved. This is where we're up to, and what I'm asking from you, what you can help us to be able to change the world, and it's happening. There's a huge awakening. What we can change it is never buy anything without demanding to know who wrote it. You want to see an up-to-date certificate. You want to know which shiners have been asked. Who do they ask the shiners to? Get a feeling. You're not just buying a pair of tefillin. Is something a good pair of tefillin? You buy for life. If you buy mezuzahs, I've opened mezuzahs to check on people, and the cloth cracks. It just cracks, splits in the middle. Good cloth doesn't crack, because good cloth, more expensive, but it's supple. It bends beautifully, and there's no problem with it. Sofrim, who are writing chaplap, as they say in Eretz Yisrael, those who are writing like this, they write anywhere in any place. I went into a sofer's office, where there were 2 or 3 sofrim writing, they've got humidifiers. They've got meters which measure the humidity. They won't write until the humidity is the right amount. Otherwise, what happens? The air is too dry, and the osius, they flake off. They just peel off after a while. And you don't know that the tefillin that you're writing has osius that have peeled off. You don't know that the mezuzahs that are rolled up inside have osius that have peeled off. You get what you pay for. If you buy a quality pair of tefillin, you'll have tefillin with a proper ribua that remain squares, they should do, that the parshis inside remain kosher, the mezuzahs that you bought. I've got mezuzahs that my brother-in-law, Yehuda Weiniger, an excellent sefer, wrote for us 25 years ago. I checked them twice in 7 years myself. Beautiful, like the day they were written. Why? Because the cloth was responsibly sourced, the writing was done responsibly in the way that, and you have it for life. And therefore, this is our chelik. Your chelik is, don't agree to buy anything, doesn't matter how long his beard is, it doesn't matter how many payers, it doesn't matter how many times he goes to the mikveh. What you need to know is, does he know his halachas? Has he got Yirah Shomayim? Does he know himself who wrote it, where it comes from? If you make that demand, then the standard and the quality of what we're being offered, what we're being supplied, will change drastically in a very short amount of time. I hand you over responsibly to David Zinger, who has decades of experience in Hilchos Stam, in Eretz Yisrael, and is a huge source of expertise and guidance to the Vat.